Hey, welcome to The Screenwriting Life. I'm Meg LaFauve.
And I'm Lorianne McKenna.
We are professional screenwriters. We've worked together as a team and separately. We've worked on studio and indie films, live action and animation, from my work on Inside Out and Captain Marvel.
To my work in Pixar's story department on Up, Brave, and Inside Out. We are here to share our insights on the craft of screenwriting and also the life. How to not only survive the ups and downs, but thrive. We want to help you become the best screenwriter you can be and to reassure you that you are not alone on this journey.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. Today we are chatting with celebrated academic and wellness thought leader, Dr. Kristen Neff.
Kristen received her doctorate from the University of California at Berkeley and is currently an associate professor of educational psychology at the University of Texas at Austin. She's a pioneer in the field of self-compassion research, creating a scale to measure the construct for almost 20 years.
In addition to writing numerous academic articles on the topic, she is author of the book Self-Compassion, The Proven Power of Being Kind to Yourself. And her new book, which the title alone, I'm so excited about this book. Listen to this title, you guys. Fierce Self-Compassion, How Women Can Harness Kindness to Speak Up, Claim Their Power, and Thrive.
I see, I'm already crying.
Welcome
to the show.
Today, we're going to talk about how we can find more self-compassion when it comes to our work and our writing. So Kristen, welcome to the show. We're so excited to have you here.
Yes. Oh, well, thanks. Happy to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. Guys, we're just in for a treat. I've had the chance of seeing Kristen speak, and I was just so blown away by everything she has to say for you guys today. But before we dive into our conversation, we're going to first do our weeks, or what we like to call adventures in screenwriting, or if today we're going to call it adventures in writing. So Lorianne will start, so Kristen can get a sense of it. Lorianne, how was your week?
Well, I find it really interesting that we're talking to you today, Kristen, because I have no idea what self-compassion is. And today, this week, I spent most of it judging myself, beating myself up, comparing myself to others, doing all the things that I do when I feel stressed, overwhelmed, not enough, not good enough. The beginning of the year, this year has been really stressful for me in terms of multiple aspects of my life. My daughter switched schools, and I'm working really hard to get a project up and going. So it feels like I'm working and grinding, and there is no there at the end of it necessarily. So it's really hard to stay focused on what my strengths might be. And so I'm really trying to investigate that, but it feels really, really hard, really hard. And so I've spent some time crying this week. I will probably cry on the show. So, you know, just everybody get ready for that. So that's been my week.
The artist life, the artistic life. Kristen, how was your week?
Well, it was a good week. I'm actually transitioning. I just I took early retirement from UT Austin. I haven't updated my my title yet. Partly because I just didn't have time to make mentor students and teach classes and do all that self-compassion work, writing books, giving talks, teaching self-compassion, et cetera. So there's a lot of fear there, this transition, you know, who am I if I'm no longer to be an assistant professor? So that's been stressful, but on the other hand, I also got put together an outline for my next book, which is Self-Compassion for Burnout. So it was kind of both things. It was good. It was creative, but it was also a little stressful and kind of, I feel like the pieces of me have been thrown up in the air and I haven't yet seen where they're going to land.
It's so amazing that growth does that, right? That we all want to grow. We all want, you know, to do more. And yet that process itself can be jumbled in emotion. And the name of that book alone, I'm so excited about that. But of course, we won't talk about that today. We have so much more to talk about. My week, just quickly, I'm finishing up a very long run of writing every day, 5 to 8 hours a day for months, including Christmas Day, guys. That process emotionally and as a writer was very interesting because there were days that I think on the whole were the most of them that I almost got into a kind of trance because it was just so constant. And this flow of writing was so constant that I could go in very quickly. And I'm not going to say it felt like I was on LSD. I don't even know what that feels like, but it literally felt trance-like and very, because my brain was getting tired and it kept going. I think what was happening is my dream brain was actually starting to engage because I was so tired, but it was kind of cool. I'm not recommending it necessarily, but on the other hand, there were days that it felt like I was scraping the inside of a melon down to the rind in terms of my head. Like I cannot, I still came up with some stuff, guys, down at that rind, because when you have to, you have to. And then the other thing that's happening this week and has been happening is, of course, notes, getting comments back. And I gave notes on another project, which always is invigorating to me and inspiring to me to do that. And then I also got notes, which led me, of course, to the Kristen on the podcast. A friend of mine said once that getting notes is you go through a process of fuck you, fuck me, what's next? And I've been observing how quickly I can move through those sometimes. And some days I can't move through them quickly at all. And sometimes it has nothing to do with notes that I'm getting. It literally has to do with me and and what else is going on in my life, maybe, right? Like sometimes just getting notes, you have to get some distance on, is this about the notes? Is this about the person giving them to me? Is this about the project? No, I'm just super tired. And I have all these other things going on and I just need some time to process and get through the fuck you or the fuck me, which is where you can also get stuck. So that also was a good transition into self-compassion, because I think what I'm trying to describe here is having self-compassion enough to say, you know what? I'm kind of stuck in fuck me right now. And I'm going to be compassionate with myself that I'm stuck and not now fuck me even more because I'm stuck in fuck me. Like it becomes this like a mirror house, right? Of attacking yourself. So I'm so excited to talk about this. And we thought we should start by really just the basics for our audience to orient them about when you say the word self-compassion, Kristen, what do you mean by that? Because people might have different ideas of that.
Yeah, no, they absolutely do. So kind of my model of self-compassion, that's research, right? In terms of, I created a scale to measure it, is actually there's three different aspects to self-compassion. So the most obvious one is just self-kindness, right? Treating yourself with the same warmth, care, concern that you would naturally show to a friend, right? I mean, if you actually were to think, if I were to say to my best friend what I just say to myself, well, first of all, would I say that? No. And what would be the consequence if I said that? And just think that would pop, that's the consequence you're having with yourself. So part of it is just being kinder, warmer, more supportive. But it's not just that. So actually, the first step of self-compassion is mindfulness. In other words, we need to be aware, recognize that we're struggling. And you may think, what do you mean? Of course I know when I'm struggling. But we often don't. Either we're just like, you know, barreling through, just like, you know, gritting our teeth and burying it. We don't pause to say, wow, I'm so stressed, or, you know, gosh, I need to stand up and stretch, or this is so hard right now. We're just so lost in it. We have no perspective. It'd be like if your friend called you up and said, hey, I'm really upset. I need to talk. You know, like, I don't have time for this. We're kind of like that with ourselves. So really the first step is recognizing that things are difficult or we're stressed. And that can be difficult because we feel bad about ourselves, or just because we're sick of the pandemic, you know, whatever the source of suffering is. And then we're kind to ourselves. And then really important, with what makes compassion different than something like pity? I mean, self-pity is not healthy. What's the difference between pity and compassion? Well, if I pity you, you don't like it, because that means I'm looking down on you. I'm separate from you. If I have compassion for you, it's like, hey, I've been there. I'm with you. So self-compassion is connected. It's not poor me. It's not woe is me. It's just remembering, hey, life is difficult for everyone. There's nothing wrong with me for struggling. You know, this is a human condition. We're all imperfect. We all lead imperfect lives. And the reason that's so important is because it helps us feel not so alone. And that sense of aloneness that arises when we beat ourselves up or we're full of shame is incredibly debilitating. So you've got those three. It's like, how do you bake a self-compassion cake? one part mindfulness, one part common humanity. And you might say the sugar is the kindness, right? And then it coheres together. But we really need all three. Otherwise, I mean, you know, if it's just self-love, I don't know, Donald Trump may love himself. I have no idea what goes on in that man's head, but it's not self-compassion. There's no sense of connectedness. There's no sense of, hey, we're all imperfect human beings doing the best we can, right? So that's what, it's really important to make that distinction, I think.
That's amazing, because when my kids were in preschool, there was an emotional intelligence preschool. And I think that now that you're saying that, that's what they were trying to teach the parents, which is first you just let your kid be aware of the emotion. They're having an emotion.
Yes.
Right. And then you are kind about it, which is mm-hmm. I'm going to sit here with you and you can do it and let you're okay. And then it's about not you, this is a human being. I do it. You, and it's funny, even my teenagers, I still do it. I'm like, well, this is what it feels like to be a teenager, because yeah. I don't want them to feel like it's their personal flaw or something. I mean, I do yes. it to myself, you guys, but all the time. Yeah. But I think that's an amazing sandwich for ourselves to think about in terms of just stop, even just catching yourself that you're doing yes. it right now.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
How do you literally do that though, right? I think like, I feel like I'm really good at being available to other people and listening, sitting in something with them, recognizing, helping them tease out what's actually going on. And then, mm-hmm. you know, that process. And I feel really good about that. And that is one of my strengths. Oddly enough, I did recognize that this week, but, mm-hmm. and I hear what you're saying and I get it, but when I feel myself tunneling into that cave, like, and I'm aware, okay, I feel like I'm struggling. I'm tunneling into the cave. I'm beating myself up. Is it just thinking, like, I don't know how to do the difference between kindness to myself and letting myself off the hook, right?
Yeah. You probably know that with your kids though, don't you? I don't know if you have kids, yes. but if you have kids, so, and imagining the ideal parent is a really good way to think about it. So as a parent, we love our kids unconditionally, whether they mess up or not. We love the bottom line is unconditional love. And yet, is it loving if your kid really is doing something that's really unhelpful? It says, Mom, I don't feel like going to school this week. You know, it's like, okay, sweetums, that's fine. You know, would you be a compassionate parent if you told sweetums that? No, you wouldn't be a good parent. So we know that as parents, we need to think of, well, what's best for our children? What do they actually need? And then try to give it to them, even if it's not maybe what they want in the moment. They want to eat the entire cake, but it's not good for them. And so we have to, we learn to trust that we know also what's good for us. We don't always know. Sometimes we get it wrong. But if we actually sincerely ask, what's going to be most healthy for me right now? We already have the wisdom inside. So for instance, you know how to be self-compassionate because you've developed the skills of compassion with other people. It's not rocket science. What you need to do is two things. First, give yourself permission to do this. By the way, it's a little harder for women because women don't feel entitled to meet their own needs. We're praised and valued if we meet everyone else's needs. And people love a self-sacrificing woman. Boy, that's good for the patriarchy, isn't it? Whoa, women love to be self-sacrificing. Good for us. You know, I mean, we got to think about this. These are the norms of our culture that we're supposed to be self-sacrificing, even though it actually doesn't help anyone. So if we value our own needs and we think, actually, I'm a human being like everyone else, I'm worthy of a compassionate response. You give yourself permission. And then part of it is just developing the new habit, right? And it is a little weird at first. It feels a little awkward to treat yourself, to talk to yourself in a kind of kind, supportive manner. But you do get used to it over time, but it takes a commitment. And usually the motivation for it is, you know, how's your current system working for you? Probably not so well for most people. There's a lot of pain, a lot of dysfunction. And there is an empirically supported way to change that pattern. You just have to practice. We've got like, you know, dozens of techniques we've developed to practice. You can take training programs. You can put sticky notes on your, you know, there's a lot of things you can do to help you remember. But it really starts with giving yourself permission.
Yeah, it feels like it's a discipline. Which I think a lot of us, I know I decide that discipline is just full steam ahead, foot on the gas, I'm doing it, right? With like narrow focus, I'm doing this 100%. which is how, you know, black and white thinkers, right? It's how we barrel through for success. But what you're suggesting is that there is a different methodology.
Yeah. Well, so I'm like that as well. I'm probably a little OCD, and this is, I'm very focused. I mean, I sometimes will stay up till 3 a.m. working on something if I'm really barreled in. There's nothing wrong with that. And I think for people who are creatives, and you know, I think that's kind of part of the mindset. There's nothing wrong with that at all. It's only a problem if, for instance, you start judging yourself for being that way. Or if you can't do that for some reason, you start being mean to yourself, right? So it doesn't have to look any particular way. Our overall relationship to ourselves needs to be framed in the larger mindset of what's healthy, what's good. And, you know, so self-care, sometimes people confuse self-compassion and self-care. Self-care is like, you know, taking breaks. I'm drinking 4 quarts of water a day, doing yoga, right? Sometimes that's, the more you can do that, the better. But this is really different. This is emotionally, when you're suffering, how are you relating to that suffering? The word compassion, passion means suffer, come means with. How are we with our suffering? So the suffering may be a negative thought you have about yourself. Do you beat yourself up about it? Do you run with it? Or do you say, actually, that hurts. Aw. And you just change the perspective. Just like if your child said something bad about themselves, you would naturally say, oh, that's not true, or I care about you, or you know what I mean? That's just kind of our natural response to others.
Do you think, I have so many questions going on in my head right now, I'm so excited. Okay, but the one I want to ask first is, this is my own experience, so I'm not saying it's everybody, but sometimes I think that my, I'm going to call it self-loathing, feels, you know, the opposite of self-compassion, perhaps, is actually trying to protect me. And it's a survival instinct. And that if you actually do what you're saying and stop and catch it and give yourself permission, then what rises up is the sadness or is the disappointment or is all those odd, they actually feel harder than to beat yourself up, because to beat yourself up feels like we're taught in this society that that's good and that means you've got grit and both. And yet, the sadness or the having to look at a crack that's rising, right? And as writers, I'm always saying to them, to the emerging writers, but to any writer, to myself, that writing, when it's an art, is that you do go towards that lava, I call it, because it feels like it's going to burn you up.
Yes.
And that in a weird way, sometimes that self-loathing is actually trying to protect you from that lava. And yet, it's also stopping you from writing, right? And it's doing everything it can to get you away from that lava. And yet to be that artist, you actually have to be like, oh, well, fuck it. I might be broken and fucked up, and but I'm going to give yourself that permission anyway. So yeah. I'm talking too much here, but like,
well, you know, you're spot on. You should be a psychologist. What you said is totally supported by research. Okay, so what we know, self-criticism comes from our evolutionary fight, flight, or freeze response. So we fight the problem. So when we criticize ourselves, there's so many ways in which unconsciously we think we're being safe. We're beating other people to the punch. We're lowering our expectations so we won't get disappointed. We're forcing ourselves to change so that then we'll be safe. That's why when we criticize ourselves, actually our cortisol levels get elevated, which are associated with the fight, flight, or freeze response, right? There's also, what does fleeing look like? We flee in shame. Just think when that feeling of shame arises, this is an evolved response. We hang our head in chains. We're kind of protecting ourselves from the perceived judgments of others, right? The freeze response, what's that? Over and over in your head, ruminating when you get stuck, that stuckness. This is like, well, maybe if I just don't move, the problem will go away. So this is why we can't beat ourselves up for beating ourselves up. I mean, we do, but why we shouldn't, because we're just trying to stay safe. We're trying to stay safe from danger. But here's the thing. We have another system that evolved to keep us safe, and that's the care system. So fight, flight, or freeze is more about personal survival. You know, a lion's chasing me. I got to run like hell or freeze to play dead or whatever. The care response developed to keep safe our children safe and our group safe. So it's also very natural for a baby or an infant to want to help it, to try to soothe it if it's upset, to protect it. It's also natural in groups to try to cohere as a group and keep the group safe, because that's also how we survive. But the care system evolved more for other people. We also have a whole different physiology. When the care system is activated, we have increased heart rate variability. Our cortisol levels go down. So what we're doing is we're kind of doing a hack with self-compassion. We're using something that kind of that evolved more to care for others, and we're using it with ourselves. And here's the thing. We don't do it as the way of like getting rid of the self-critical thoughts. I mean, sometimes they have information, but we try to say, can we say that in a more constructive manner, right? So in other words, we don't want to like squash our inner critic. We want to say, thank you for trying to help. I hear you. But, you know, I think we can say this in a way that's a little more constructive. So I have a whole exercise. You can find it in the Mindful Self-Compassion Workbook about how to motivate yourself with kindness as opposed to criticism. And what we do is we listen to the inner critic. We try to think, how is it trying to keep me safe? We thank it for its efforts. And then we say, could you just make a little room for this other voice, which is our more inner compassionate voice? And then we say, well, what message might I have for myself from this perspective? It's exactly like parenting, a good parent. You know, if you tell your kid you're crap, do it or else, you'll get short-term compliance, but you have long-term harm. That kid will become afraid of failure. They'll have performance anxiety. It's the exact same thing with ourselves. We get short-term compliance, long-term harm. If we motivate ourselves just because we care, I want to reach my goals. I'm not inadequate. It's not like I'm a horrible person if I don't reach my goals, but I want to. I want to succeed because it makes me happy, you know, because this is what gives me meaning in life. Then here's the kicker. When you fail or you write that screenplay that gets rejected or whatever it is, it's like, instead of I'm a horrible person, is what can I learn from this failure? How can I grow from this? You're in the mindset to actually be able to learn. And so self-compassionate motivation is more effective because it's linked to growth mindset. It's linked to learning. It means more grit, more sustainability, because if you get knocked down, you can get back up again. So you're you're a natural born psychologist, Meg. You just didn't know it.
And I've done a lot of research for like movies like Inside Out or whatever.
Well, so yeah, there you go. That's why.
You know, I love that, because I've been on Zoom calls with other writers getting notes, and I'm just so amazed at their ability to stay present and have that mindset of how am I going to grow from this? How's the project going to, I want these notes to grow from this. I mean, they're rare birds, I have to be honest. I think a lot of writers get a blank face because internally they're moving through that process of fuck me. It's weird because as artists, I think that we are so sensitive, and I mean that in a positive way. It's like we're tuned beings for storytelling. So we are very sensitive to any feeling or what's happening in the room, or we're so attuned. We're such tuning forks that you can get lost a little bit. Even if you can't do this, it's just about catching it and getting that distance if you can. And I love this idea of your workbook. I'm going to buy it today, because I think it is, like Lorian mentioned, a discipline. It is a habit, like you said, that we have to get into. So in a weird way, I'm trying to say to people, don't judge yourself if you can't do what Kristen is describing right now.
Yeah,
she's telling you it's a habit. It's a muscle that we're just going to have to do it. And bigger things may come up. And if it comes up, we are these tuning forks. We're writers. Take it to your work, right? Take it to your work.
And here's the thing. It's not about getting it right. It's about opening your heart. So one of the sayings we have in the self-compassion world is the goal of practice is simply to be a compassionate mess. You can still be a mess. You will still be a mess. You don't have to try to be perfect. You don't have to try to get it right. But if your goal is when you get it wrong, can you be kind and supportive and warm with yourself? You know, can you try to learn from the experience? You can be a compassionate. I'm still a mess. After 20 years, I maybe marginally a little better in some small ways, but I'm just as reactive. I still have my personality that I was basically born with in many ways. but I'm compassionate toward the mess. And it makes all the difference in the world because you can live that way. And here's what starts to happen. It's very interesting. Instead of your happiness and your sense of worth being contingent on getting it right, your happiness starts being contingent on, is your heart open or not? Even when something goes terribly wrong, when you give yourself compassion, you give yourself kindness and warmth and love, and you feel connected to others. So you're in a state of like loving, connected presence. That's another way to describe the three components. Loving, connected presence. That's happiness. That's kind of that's the meaning we all long for. And it's totally not contingent on getting it right. In fact, it steps in precisely when things are most difficult. And your whole, the whole foundation on which you base your happiness and sense of self-worth shifts, and is much more stable and much more achievable.
I have a question. Well, two things. One, I was on a notes call this week and I was—
does that mean like criticism or something? What is that?
That means so good.
I pitched, my partner and I pitched our project and then we got feedback.
Oh, right. So that's what notes means, feedback. So okay,
like
got it.
Hard stuff, right? It was okay. Questions, you know.
So okay.
Basically, this doesn't work.
Yeah, okay, right. Okay, got it.
And here are my ideas to how to fix it. And here are some other ways it doesn't work. Oh, and by the way, here are some questions that blow everything up, right? So, but it was interesting. Yeah. The notes were big. And I didn't do the fuck you, fuck me, what's next. I was in what's next while I was listening to the notes. Mm-hmm. And I made myself really open, but then what happened, and here's how I beat myself up about it. I couldn't celebrate that I was available for the notes because then I was like, oh, we need to do all these notes, right? Instead of pulling back and looking at them in a bigger context, right? So, but I was so quick to jump in and say, oh, here's where I'm bad. Here's where I'm not successful at this. When I was so proud of myself at the beginning for being so available and present in the notes, which I have struggled with in the past, like Meg, you were mentioning. I have this, we were talking earlier about our fear response. And so, you know, I go right to, I'm not good enough, which tags into my fraud syndrome, which is like, eventually everyone's going to find out the truth about me. So if I believe it before anyone else finds out, then I'm protected. The other side feels to me confidence in myself, no matter what. And then someone finds out that, you know, that I'm not worthy or good enough, that pain feels worse than the pain I'm inflicting on myself. So I know what you're not talking about confidence, right?
But no, it's not positive affirmations.
Right. But it's the opposite. Connected to me to be, to self-talk to myself, to have self-compassion. It does feel like I need to believe that what I'm saying to myself in the self-compassion is true. And in order to access believing in that truth, I do need to have some confidence in myself, in my strengths, or am I getting this wrong?
Well, so it's really important. So for instance, there's a difference between self-esteem and self-compassion. So the way when they're similar is they're both kind of about an underlying sense of self-worth, but self-esteem is typically contingent. It's about being special and above average, right? So if you got feedback that, your screenplay was average, you'd be devastated. If you told me my book was average, I'd be devastated. That's just the way kind of it works, right? So we need to be special and above average. And it's contingent on success, you know, looking a certain way or being, you know, performing a certain way or other people liking you. It's also contingent on that. The sense of self-worth that comes from self-compassion is unconditional, right? So in other words, you can still be a mess and have self-compassion. You don't have to lie to yourself to say that you're a mess. You are a mess. I'm a mess. We're all messes. I mean, that's kind of the human condition. If you use self-compassionate language that sounds like bullshit, you know, like, you're really such a good person when in fact you are pretty damn mean to that person, your assistant, whatever. That's not self-compassionate. That's just lying to yourself. So let's take this because I can be reactive and I can be mean sometimes and hopefully I'm not usually, but it happens, right? Because I can a very strong personality. So the feeling, okay, I was mean, let's say. So what compassion would look like if I was mean to someone is, first of all, feeling the pain of that. Wow. Because if you just blow it off and you really want to say, I wasn't mean, it was the other person's fault. They were being stupid. That's not going to help you. Okay, so I was, what I said was really mean. First of all, you start with the mindfulness, feeling the pain of that. That was mean. I was, it's not that I mean, what I said was mean. So that's also important to differentiate you from your behavior. What I said was really mean. Mindfulness, oh, that really hurt. Okay, and so it's almost like I might not even say my thing to myself, but I would like soften around that. Oh, that really hurts. Instead of like that, you were really mean. It's like, wow, I was mean. I was a human being. I was fallible. I said something that I regret. So I'd taken the pain of it first. And then, by the way, usually I'm very quick to apologize, partly because I can take that in. So you aren't saying that, you aren't lying to yourself, because that's not going to help you. You're letting it in. You're opening to it, but in a supportive way. Yes, I may have said something mean. Am I the only person in the history of humanity that has ever said something mean? No, we all do it. We're stressed. It's, you know, it happens sometimes. I guess I do try to work on it, and I'm marginally better, but whatever. It's probably also the thing that's tied to the fact that I can be really successful at some things. You know, a lot of these personality traits have good and bad aspects to them. And so that's the way you would approach it, with warmth, you know? Yeah, so occasionally I can say something mean. It doesn't mean I'm not a valuable person, you know? Again, just like when that child is first born, the love is unconditional. They don't have to earn your love and care. It's just an intrinsic part of being a human being. And you actually learn to... And really compassion. It's like no one is cut out of the circle of humanity. So we can't cut ourselves out either. We are human beings intrinsically worthy of kindness, respect, and support, just like all other human beings. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
If you're hoping you're never going to mess up again, it's not going to happen. Compassionate mess. It really helps me. Okay. I'm a compassionate mess. I'm a mess. What I said was wrong.
Down pat.
You know? Yes. And then so can you be compassionate with that mess? You don't have to stop being a mess. Isn't that the good news?
It does feel like a survival instinct that if I'm compassionate with the mess, I will fail more. That's a motivating factor. I'm not saying this makes logical sense.
Well, I know
sense.
That's the first thought, but ironically here, the research really supports it. It's the exact opposite. The more you're able to accept the mess, and give yourself warmth and kindness in the midst of the mess, the more resources you have to get yourself out of it and to make change. When you beat yourself up, again, it kind of just, first of all, makes you not even want to look at the mess, or it depresses you, or, you know, like, let's face it, shame is not exactly a get up and go mind state to like do those healthy changes in your life. So the more we accept our imperfection, the better chance we have at doing something about it, even though we're never going to be perfect. But it gives us the resources, the best possible space to learn from our mistakes and grow from them. And again, you don't have to just believe me. We got a lot of research supporting this.
I'm going to try right now. So I have been silently crying, as Jeff and Meg and Kristen can attest to. They're watching me during this whole thing. So sorry. Okay.
You're going to try to have compassion for yourself right now? Good.
Yeah.
Good.
So Lawrence, you know, one thing you can try, sometimes it's too much mentally, right? And so sometimes it's good to do all this in your body, partly because it works physiology. So the first thing, just ground your feet to the floor. So when you feel your feet grounded to the floor, that can kind of give you some stability in your body, you know, kind of letting the earth, you might say, take some of it. Can you do some sort of gesture, like, you know, putting your hands on your face, or maybe both hands on your heart, or what feels good to you, what feels supportive to you, a hug like this, right? And so just let the mind go, just let the mind, the storyline of you and the story, whatever's happening. And just for a moment, just give yourself a little warmth, like you might your child or your good friend, you know? And we'll do a little self-compassion break. This is hard, whatever you're feeling, you know, we're all feeling our own version of pain. I'm going through a lot of stuff right now as well. You know, this is part of life. It's part of being human. There's nothing wrong with you for feeling like this. You know, and so can you just be a little tender with yourself, a little gentle, a little warm? Yeah. And then do you see how that kind of shifts? It kind of, it doesn't make the problem go away, but it's a way of holding the problem in a way that's more helpful.
Thank you. And I don't doubt that our listeners might have been experiencing something similar listening to you talk.
Of course.
So it's, I'm happy for this to stay in the show.
Okay.
I love that. Very, that's awesome.
Thank you for that. Thank you very much.
You know, well, especially if you're a naturally warm, compassionate, supportive person to others, and I suspect that you are. The good news is you got the tools in your toolkit. You just have to give yourself permission to use them with yourself.
I think when you said hold yourself like you would a child, and I imagine myself hugging my daughter when she's upset, that really helped.
Yes.
A little bit, it gave me some distance too, instead of imagining myself comforting my inner child or my younger self.
Yes.
Which is so painful, right? To confront some of that, it feels too lava.
Yes.
So it was helpful to imagine that I was hugging her or a friend.
Yes. Yes.
Because that gave it, the distance that I needed to be inside myself a little bit. And not, because I think that that comforting your inner child, I think, is too raw sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's three different ways you can practice self-compassion. Sometimes you just self to self. You can imagine that you're giving compassion to someone else and then kind of doing a little U-turn. You can also imagine someone very compassionate being there for you. Like maybe you had a grandparent who was so loving. You might imagine that they were there giving you a hug, saying, you know, what would their perspective be? So there's really three different doorways in. It doesn't matter so much how you get there. The point is to, again, have an open heart. And to be mindful, which also, mindful, remember, also means being clear, seeing what is. We aren't twisting it. We aren't distorting it. We aren't sugarcoating it. We're seeing it clearly. And we aren't alone. So important. We're all part of this larger interconnected whole. And also related to this is any single thing we are experiencing is related to so many other factors. You know, the current climate, the culture, other people we interact with, our physical health, you know, our genetics. I mean, it's really the idea that we're separate individuals, totally in control of what's happening in our life is a complete illusion. We are part of something much bigger than our small selves. And remembering that takes, what we're doing is we're taking, some people think it's really like no self-compassion, non-self, because you aren't thinking of yourself as a self. You're turning the lens of compassion inward, which makes the sense of self not so strong. I'm a human being like everyone else. Does that make sense? It's not really self-focused. By the way, I just have to say, Meg, you realize you were in a flow state when you were talking about your writing incident?
I wonder, what do you mean?
You were in a flow state, classic flow symptoms. Sense of self fades away, sense of time fades away. And it's almost like being on psychedelics, you said.
Yeah.
Same state you achieve in meditation. The default mode network, I won't go into it, but there's a region of the brain responsible for creating a sense of self that quiets down in flow state. So artistic endeavors, when artists are in a flow state, the sense of self recedes, the chatter recedes, and you are just completely immersed in what you're doing. And it, you know, it can be really
I would assume, and maybe not, but I would assume if you're in the opposite of self-compassion, it would be hard to get into the flow state because you're in a different part of your brain. You're in the critical beat up part of your brain. I don't know. Is that true?
Well, yeah. So the default mode, and the reason they call it default mode is this is the normal resting state of our brain. So when you have nothing occupying yourself, this is where the brain goes. So evolution and all it's in this. And its kindness evolved a brain, a human brain, so that when we have free time, downtime, when we have nothing to do, we create a sense of self, we project it into the past and the future, and we look for problems.
No wonder I like to stay busy.
You know, this is a really good survival mechanism, right? Yeah. So all our free time, we think of what did I do wrong? What's wrong with me? What might go wrong? What was wrong? This is where the brain naturally goes. When we're absorbed in an activity, whether it's watching our breath and meditation, or we're like totally into writing or something like that, that quiets down. So self-compassion actually helps quiet that down because we aren't so, when we're self-critical, we're really self-focused. When it's like, I'm a human being struggling like everyone else. We're actually less self-focused. Mm-hmm. You're going to say something?
No, it's just what happens when we read. Because I am desperately wanting to read.
Interesting.
Right?
Well, like, for sure. 100% for me personally. That is why I read every morning. I read a novel every morning because it helps me get into the flow state. And absolutely.
But the brain on meditation and the brain on flow, you can't tell the difference. So you guys are meditating in your own way. How's that?
So when you're getting into this state of self-compassion, I would think that some beliefs you hold about yourself or the world could bump, right? Like, if I do this and I love myself, somebody's going to take advantage of me, or I'm going to fail, or it's so funny because this morning I was in my head yelling at my husband about something stupid, like it was so stupid. In my head, I heard myself say, "Well, you always get to be mad and I don't." And then I just caught myself and I was like, "Wait a minute, is that true?" And I realized, oh no, that's my father. Like, it wasn't even like current, this thing that I'm basing all. And I would think when you're compassionate, some of that might come up. Am I wrong? Did the belief system start to rise up or no? Do they calm?
No, definitely. So we actually have a term for it. It's called backdraft. So backdraft is like, if you had to spend your whole life shutting down your heart, keeping the doors of your heart closed, to kind of just to survive, and you start opening the doors of your heart, it's like a house is on fire. If you fling open the doors, that you might say the love rushes in, the air rushes in, it ignites with all the stuff that's inside and it can actually be released. So it's very, very common. And for that reason, we often tell people go slowly. You know, you may start practicing self-compassion, and at first what you see is like pain and judgment and all these old beliefs, and you think you're doing it wrong. Well, in fact, you're doing it right. It's a sign that you're opening your heart and that you're getting in touch with all this stuff that you'd been repressing. It also means you want to be self-compassionate about how you don't want to like traumatize yourself or re-traumatize yourself. Right. You need to go slowly. For some people, actually, it even helps to do this journey with a therapist, especially if you have like maybe the voice in your head is the internalized voice of an abusive parent, for instance. Then it can really help to have a trained therapist help you along the journey. It's an important point, but I just want, before I lose the thought, because what you're pointing to, that idea, I'm going to be taken advantage of. This is partly why I wrote my book, Fierce Self-Compassion, because there are two faces to compassion. There's the tender side, which we've been talking about more. The tender side is about unconditional acceptance. Nurturing is more of a warm, loving energy, like again, with the baby, you know, your kid may be screaming its head off, but if you're in that tender mode, you just rock that child, you try to soothe that child, you unconditionally accept that child. But there's also mama bear self-compassion, which is fierce self-compassion. And that's, so compassion is about the alleviation of suffering. It's like, by definition, it's concerned with the alleviation of suffering. Sometimes that means getting angry. If someone's trying to harm me, then that kind of fierce mama bear energy rises up and says, no, that's not okay. The Me Too movement, the Black Lives Matter movements, these are self-compassion movements. As people rise up and say, no, you will not harm me any longer. It's not okay. There can even be anger in that. Anger focused on the prevention of harm is a form of compassion. It's only when it causes harm that it's not. And of course, the line's kind of tricky. The anger aimed at preventing harm is a form of compassion. So it's about protecting ourselves. It's about taking action to meet our own needs. It's not just about going along with the status quo. You know, might say, no, we need to change this. This isn't working for me. We need a more fair distribution, or I would love to help you, but I can't. I need to take care of myself, drawing boundaries. And then motivating change. You know, again, I said that before, people get so confused here. You accept yourself unconditionally, but you don't accept all your behaviors that are unhealthy, and you certainly don't accept all the situations you find yourself in if they're unhealthy. And so that's the fierce mama bear side of self-compassion that's equally important. It's kind of like yin and yang. We need both, and we need them both to be in balance. Gender role socialization really screws us up here, because men are socialized. By the way, it's not actual biological sex. It's how you were socialized. People raised as boys are socialized to be young and not yin. They're socialized to be fierce and not tender. They get called names if they're too sensitive. this harms men. Only 15% of the people who show up to a self-compassion workshop are men, even though we know this is one of the most powerful sources of coping and resilience we have available to us. It's because boys are socialized not to look at that stuff. It's like a sign of weakness. And that means that men don't have access to some of these powerful coping resources. People who raise as girls who are socialized to be tender towards others, not themselves, but to others, don't be fierce, don't get angry, don't speak up, don't speak too loudly. Don't ask for, don't toot your own horn. Don't ask for too much. You know, we aren't allowed to be fierce, and that harms women. That was actually a product, an intentional product of patriarchy to keep women in their place, right? Let's just call it what it is. It was a power grab by the patriarchy. So self-compassion is a radical act, both for people raised as men and women, because it's saying, if you guys like to swear, fuck that, I'm going to be myself, which is both tender and fierce. And to be whole, I need both.
I know. Can we clap? Yes, oh my God. Yes,
yes. And I'm running for president of the United States.
I'm voting.
I would vote for you. Yes. Yeah.
I love that your act for us to individually accept our messy selves is a radical act,
And it's a political act.
And
it's also a political act
for the world. It's a radical act. And that it's okay if you got, because the anger for women, holy smokes, that's like the final frontier. Like, boy, people are afraid of angry women. And it's
especially angry women of a certain age,
right? And they're also like, get this, competent women. People dislike, probably heard this one, it's so heartbreaking, but people dislike competent women. You have to be competent to rise in your profession, but people don't like competent women. So it's hard to get promoted or get pay raises if people don't like you.
Right? Yeah, I swear sometimes it's like people just don't, they have this mommy fear or something that they project onto competent women. And I see a lot of actresses pushing back on this now. And there, I think there is a movement.
It's really starting
to break this up, you know.
It's starting to change. But we need to be aware of the dynamics, because women do it to other women. Women especially don't like competent women. No, I was going
to
say,
women do it mostly to other women.
Yeah, because it's complicated. There are a lot of reasons, but it's this thing of balancing the yin and yang, balancing the fierce and the tender. What the research shows is there's less of this backlash if you're able to balance both kind of in a way that people can observe. So it also helps with that problem if you're balanced.
So. I can't wait for that book. I got to go get it now. I got to go get it right now. I'm going to read it this weekend. I'm so excited.
What you said about, go ahead.
No, go.
I was going to say what you said about, we're all connected and
this
is taken out of humanity.
Yes.
It sort of made me think, we're all sort of raised, or I've been acculturated to believe in individualism. I have to do it all myself. I'm on my own. Right? Mm-hmm. Being needy is gross, all those things.
Yes.
But if I think about it, if I reframe it in terms of how I parent, and I'm trying my best to be a really good parent, really compassionate parent, that I can meet her where she is, wherever she is, and guide her through that with unconditional love, I love you no matter what style, that I'm included in that. That I'm isolated from that in some, like, I don't know where I got that idea, but when you said that, it was like, blew my mind. Like, I had this idea that I was separate somehow, different, out of. And so if I include myself in that, it's really powerful.
Yeah.
I am as important and worth that as my daughter is. Like,
no one can be cut out of the circle of humanity, including ourselves. And in some ways, starting with ourselves, because we're the only one who was there at 3 a.m, when we're still in bed. And, so we really have to start with the human being we have the most direct access to, which is ourselves.
No, I think we should all be men and women thinking about our female characters and where is their fierceness and their fierceness for others, but for themselves.
Yes.
I'm
actually working on a project about this right now. So now I have some different avenues in. So I'm really excited.
Well, Kristen, we always end our episode asking our guests the same three questions.
Okay.
So the first one is, what brings you the most joy when it comes to your work?
Well, I feel so blessed that what I do makes a difference, you know? So when I think of, I mean, I get just heartbreaking letters from people. I mean, it almost sounds grandiose, but it's true. I get letters saying, I was thinking of committing suicide and I read your book and it changed my mind. I mean, it's like, I could die tomorrow. My life has been worth living right there. Mm. So just to have that ability to help people, and I'm not even doing it. The reason I'm doing it is because I think it's fascinating and all of that, but it's almost like this welcome side effect. I'm not this like person who would, I'm not out feeding homeless people. I'm not necessarily so altruistic. So to have something that I love and I'm so fascinated by be so directly helpful is just brings me unbelievable joy.
That's amazing. Now I kind of don't want to ask you the second question. I don't want to take away from that moment. But the second question is, what pisses you off about your work?
Oh, well, I can go there. I have a whole chapter on this. That's partly why I left academia. I retired earlier. I mean, to the point, the part of the work that, and I needed to do this as a, you know, as an academic and do the research. And now it's like a field of 4,000 studies and it's taking care of itself. But academia can be so petty and so insular. And they didn't value the work I did in the world because I wasn't doing enough like committee work. And it's just, academia, so much of it is such BS that pissed me off. Luckily, I was in a fortunate position to be able to retire early. So, yeah.
And final question is, when you think about your work, is there a specific, I'm trying to think about a phrase, we usually ask this for writers. So what we'll say is, in your writing, is there a specific scene or passage that you want to be remembered by? But
you could think element or aspect.
Element of your work that you want to be remembered for.
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, one thing I do in my writing is I really put out all my dirty laundry in a way that's not typical for academics. I mean, if you read my first book, I talk about some like excruciatingly private stuff. Actually, I don't want to be remembered for what I wrote, but put it this way. I knew if I didn't, it wouldn't reach as many people. I knew if people saw me as like this all together self-help guru and they didn't see like, you want to see, you know, someone, the mud I've been through, that would actually help me connect to people. And so even though I'm naturally a private person, I'm not like a tell-all person. It's actually excruciating for me to be that revealing. It's not normal for me, not natural for me, I should say. I do it anyway, because I know it helps people connect.
That is exactly what we talk about all the time on the show as writers. That's your lava. And that yes. is the connection point to humanity. Your humanity, that stuff that feels like, makes you feel vulnerable, is yes. the connection point. I just makes me so happy to hear yeah. you say that. It's amazing. Thank you so much for being on the show. I could talk to you for like 5 more hours. We will go by the new book as a way to continue our relationship with you and your amazing insights and journey that you've taken and how you're really helping to change the world. And thank you for being here and helping us.
Thanks so much to Kristen for coming onto our show. It was really special.
And thanks for tuning in to our listeners. And if you haven't yet, please join our Facebook group at facebook.com/thescreenwritinglife. And also please do drop us a review on Apple Podcasts. It really does help us and is a nice way to give back to us so we can keep doing this.
And remember, you are not alone, and keep writing.
Thanks for tuning in to The Screenwriting Life. We love our community, and we want to get to know you even better. Join our Facebook group at facebook.com/thescreenwritinglife or email us at thescreenwritinglife@gmail.com to have your question considered for the show. You can also suggest topics by emailing us there. Also, we'd love for you to drop us a review on Apple Podcasts. Even if we don't read your review on air, trust me, we have read it, and not only does it mean the world to us, but it helps other people find the show. We've always been driven by mission and mentorship, and reviewing our show helps expand that mission. And of course, until next Sunday, happy writing.